Hello, my name is Lisa Williams, and you're listening to the inaugural podcast of the Center for Citizen Media. In this, our first podcast, our guest is Brittany Gilbert, blogger-in-chief at NashvilleIsTalking.com. The site is operated by Nashville ABC affiliate WKRN and provides a daily look at the world through the eyes of Nashville's bloggers. Tell me about how the station got into this.
Well, the station was working with a consultant by the name of Terry Heaton, who is really on the forefront of like new media and is a consultant for the television industry. And he sort of convinced the general manager that it would be a really good time for him to sort of branch out and create some online real estate. The station realized that they were losing viewers, especially in the younger demographics. People were getting their news online, and most people, in their early 30s and 20s and teens don't really watch local news. And so they wanted to sort of like branch out and, start some online properties, and they thought the good way to do that would be to create sort of a blog hub.
Mm-hmm.
And that's sort of what Nashville is Talking is. It is an aggregator of all locally produced web blogs, video blogs in our viewing area. So they were considering finding someone in the newsroom to run the site, but they thought rather than do that, that they would sort of look into the pre-existing blogging community and find someone to do that. And that's sort of how I came into play. I had a personal blog that I'd run since 99 or so, and the station had a couple of blogger meetups. They were sort of scouting for someone, and I met the news director at one of those, and he'd read my site, and they were sort of interested in talking more, and after that we sort of, I mean, when they talked to me, I thought it was going to be a voluntary thing, a couple hours a week, and then I was very surprised to learn that it was going to be a full-time position, salaried position, so...
Yes, you're a professional blogger now.
Yeah.
the sort of mythical, quasi-mythical beast that everybody's seeking. You're it, you know?
I know. And we've actually hired a second blogger who's working full-time in the newsroom as well, so there are two of us.
Really? Who's that?
His name is Adam Kleinheider, and we started a purely political blog because Nashville has a very active political blogging community, and so we started a strictly political blog that he writes and edits full-time as well.
Oh, that's great. Now, one of the things that surprised me that you said is you've been blogging since 99.
Yeah.
I've been blogging since 2000, and that's way longer than most people I know.
Yeah.
I think when we started blogging, nobody had heard the word blog.
I know. And, you know, I started out on diaryland.com,
yep.
Which is, you know, mm-hmm. There were no permalinks. There were no, you know, it was very sort of primitive at the time. And
we were blogging a few years before people had comments.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. Comments and permalinks. Yeah, that's right. They didn't even exist. And so I didn't even realize that Nashville had so many bloggers because for me, blogging was always a way to find the best and the brightest. You know, I mean, it was a way to look outside of corporate media and to find writers who interested me, and that was never a geographical, you know, enterprise. So I didn't really look for Nashville area blogs, but I discovered once we started doing this that there are just a ton, and so it's been a big eye opener for me because we have a ton of people in the area who produce their own blogs.
That's a really interesting question, and I run a local news site as well, and one of the things that really motivated me was sort of the intersection between the web and actual physical geography, e.g.
yeah.
points on the planet,
mm-hmm.
which is something that still today the web doesn't do very well. If you
right.
and I are looking for local blogs, there's really no automated way to say, give me all the blogs in zip code X.
I know.
You know,
Metafilter has something like that in that if you have a Metafilter account, then you can see the people who are nearest your zip code and that sort of thing. But there, you're right, there is no, you know, place for you to go to find local or, you know, geographically specific sites.
Yeah, so I think, you know, in a strange way, you know, one of the barriers to entry, if somebody has a good sort of local aggregator, is the work it takes to build up simply the knowledge of the local blogging community and sort of build that list.
Right.
I think also one of the interesting things is that because geography isn't huge on the web, you'll find that even if you have sort of a group of Nashville bloggers, or I have a group of Watertown, Massachusetts bloggers, they're not necessarily talking about their local area. They're actually interacting with people who are interested in the same things that they're interested in globally.
And that's, I don't doubt for a minute that there are dozens of local blogs that I may never know about simply because they're not going to write about anything in their, you know, immediate location that would bring up a flag for me.
Right.
They may never say I was in, you know, Hillsborough Village. And that's something I have, you know, flagged in Technorati. But, yeah, there's a lot of them that never, ever will mention where they are.
So. Right, right. And one of the things that I actually like about that is if I do discover somebody when we run the aggregator, it gives this, I think, sort of airy sense of openness to the world in that community, which I think is kind of interesting that I think a lot of local news sites wouldn't really have a good excuse to talk about, I don't know, the World Cup. You know, but simply because people are talking about it in our local area, we now we can sort of address the things that, I don't know, we had some self-imposed barriers about talking about because they couldn't kind of make it through a news meeting.
Right.
Like, why are we talking about the World Cup in Nashville or Watertown, Massachusetts?
Right.
But we're talking about it because people are talking about it.
Exactly. And that's sort of the whole point of Nashville is Talking. The title of the site itself is what the site is about. I mean, my job is to keep an eye on all of the locally produced blogs and to sort of be a human aggregator for what people are talking about. And I try to do, you know, if there's one thing in specific, we just had a recent death row execution, and so, you know, it's a lot of talk about that, both pro and con, and I try to do, you know, these roundups where if you want a good sampling of where people are on one position, then you could come to Nashville Talking and find excerpts, you know, from everyone who's written about that issue in the area. That's sort of what it's all about.
Now, talking about sort of the community that's kind of grown up around your blog, or that you've kind of aggregated, what's happened, first of all, how old is the project, and kind of what's happened in the local blogosphere since you started?
Well, it started in April of last year, and at that time we had, I don't know, 100 or so blogs listed. I mean, I came into a pre-made list. The consultant here, he, you know, he took control of finding a list. And then, you know, after that, it's sort of, you know, through Technorati and through people, you know, linking to others and commenting and even emailing me to ask to get included, our list has jumped to, you know, close to 400.
Wow,
so
that's
I've
great.
Noticed that some people even start blogs after having read Nashville's Talking. You know, they notice that we have a really vibrant online community and they want to be a part of that. And so, you know, I think that not only is it Nashville's Talking is not only a reflection of what bloggers are saying, but it's also inspired some people to start their own blogs.
That's great. And I think one of the things that's really interesting about Nashville is Talking, in particular of the things that I've been looking at, is that it really is based on a blog ecosystem. A lot of places where I'm looking at, they've essentially allowed you to create a blog on our site. But I think, you know, as I've done it, on the site that I run, you can do that. But I've realized over time that it's actually a really good thing to essentially encourage a local blog ecosystem because you start linking to each other.
Yes. We've never really wanted a place, you know, we didn't want bloggers to come in and write on our site, although we do employ guest bloggers on the weekend when I'm off. We pay them $100, a different person every weekend to take over and, you know, highlight what they find interesting. And so we sort of introduce new voices each weekend. But we've always wanted to, you know, encourage people to create on their own domains and on their own websites. And we, you know, we don't want to steal or exploit anyone's content. We want to promote hits to other, you know, people. And so, you know, I think they really appreciate that. The bloggers here don't really feel like they're being taken advantage of anyway. They get hits from Nashville's Talking, and so, you know, there's no it's not big media like exploiting anyone.
Right, exactly. You know, it's not user-generated content, which is kind of like a really kind of horrible phrase.
Yeah.
You know, very unlovely. And, you know, the I'm actually looking at your sort of local aggregator right now, and it seems like you almost have your human-edited conversation sort of on the right pointing to things, and essentially machine aggregation on the left, where it's just, you know, a feed of RSS headlines.
Yeah, anything that gets updated, you know, that's within the area, you know, gets pulled on the right-hand side. And on the left-hand side, it's more editorial, you know, an editor will... I decide what goes up on the left. So it's a great way for people to find everything that's been updated, and then it's also a way to sift through the large number of local sites as well.
Right, right. Yeah, and there's something I think compelling about, you know, sort of making a collection and having an editorial point of view that kind of brings more interest to to it, whereas, you know, one of the problems with just having an aggregator is this kind of feeling that it's kind of a rattle bag and it's kind of hard to approach. I personally love I love a rummage bin, so I actually think those are really fun.
Mm-hmm.
But I really appreciate that kind of sort of human editing aspect.
Right.
So what kind of makes your eyeballs blink? What as you're scanning down, you know, your huge, you know, RSS feed of news items coming from the blogs, what makes you say, okay, I gotta put that in there?
Well, you know, it varies. You know, if it's something that I think would be important to most of the people, it's something I would definitely put up. But a lot of the time, you know, and this is probably not the best way to do it, but whatever I find the most interesting, and it's not because I necessarily think that I have the best taste, but because if I think that's sort of what blogs have taught me is that if one person is interested, then there are, you know, an indefinite number of people who are also interested because we're not, you know, that much different from one another. I am definitely looking for things that are offbeat, tongue-in-cheek, that are different from your very straight-laced, objective newscast. Things that are funny, things that are irreverent, things that are, you know, written in a way that is, you know, clever and that would never really work in a, you know, standard news media. So that sort of thing is really what piques my interest more than anything else. Just great, you know, and I don't ever want to limit blogs to being, you know, just about war blogging and politics. And so anytime anybody uses their blog for storytelling that I find compelling, I always try to eliminate those because those are always my favorite blogs.
Yeah.
You know, those that weren't necessarily agenda-driven but just had, you know, a really great voice behind it.
Well, that brings up an interesting question is that, in a way, the blogs you have are sort of this interesting parallel universe or parallel track to the news coverage. How do you think that the sort of local blogosphere that you've got and the news coverage coming out of your station, how do they sort of touch each other?
And well, in the mornings we have an editorial meeting every morning where, you know, we decide what we cover for the day, and both Adam and myself are asked by the news director, you know, what are people talking about? And you know, oftentimes those things will be assigned to a reporter and get covered, so they're directly impacted in that way. And then there's also, you know, there's times when the news director will ask me to, you know, ask a question of the readers to get, you know, an idea of some feedback about, you know, certain stories. They even come to me when they need someone to interview, you know, for a talk back or some sort of reference or resource. They're like, you know, do you know a blogger who is, you know, in this community who, you know, has ties to this, and I can hook them up with somebody who, you know, it might be an expert on a certain subject. There are a lot of ways in which they, you know, intersect, but they also very much stand alone.
Yeah, they diverge, and I think you pointed out that one of the ways that they diverge also is humor.
Yeah.
That's very true in my local area, too. I think one of the things that's kind of difficult for either a newspaper or really any kind of news organization to get at is that in any sort of functional society, a lot of the things that happen, especially in local government, are actually funny. There's a lot of comic opera aspect to what's going on. But if the newspaper, the news organization, points that out, because they are a source of authority, they look a little bit like a bully. And they don't want to, which I think is good. But I think, you know, since the, with blogging, you can be funny in ways that aren't mean.
Right, and it's also, you know, the other great thing about having this outlet is that, this, you know, I'm not speaking for the station.
Right.
I'm speaking for myself, and they, you know, they're supportive of my point of view, but I can say things that are irreverent or humorous that, that they wouldn't necessarily get away with simply because of this, you know, the blogging medium. It's not, you know, it's not going out of the air, and so, I mean, I was talking to my news director about how popular The Daily Show is, and he was like, you know, we've got to find a way to, you know, tap into that, you know, because there's no reason why people can't get their news and laugh at the same time, and so, but they don't want to change, you know, their on-the-air newscast, but the way that they can do that is through the blog.
Right. Well, that brings up an issue. What are your influences?
What do you mean specifically?
When you were starting this project, or even you personally as a blogger, what other blogs or other projects outside of blogging, like The Daily Show, really have an effect on sort of how you've thought about this project?
Well, I've discovered that I've been sort of immersed in the online community since starting this job, and I know that I'm reading much of the day, and so when I come home, I don't read as many books or magazines, and I find that I really have to purposefully like step outside the online community because I don't get as many of those influences, you know, as I might should.
Right.
Like I don't have cable. I don't watch The Daily Show and you know, I spend most of my time reading blogs, and so I mean, I can tell you online influences, but
yeah, I'm interested in online.
Well,
influences as well.
I started out, I think the first blog I discovered was Metafilter, the group blog.
Right.
That gave me a little experience in, you know, a self-policing community. You know, I wasn't running one, but I was able to participate in one. And then, you know, I've been reading, you know, Jason Kotke's site for, you know, since I started, and Deuce.com, and all of the, all of the big blogs that everyone knows about influenced me just like they did everyone else.
Right. So. Your blog, it's interesting that you bring up Kotke. Your blog reminds me of a lot of the sort of great link blogs.
Yeah,
you know,
yeah.
Like when I looked at it, actually reminded me of Scripting News on Dave Weiner's
site,
where individual posts are very, very short.
Yeah.
You know, you're really kind of clicking along very fast, and
right.
I think that really gives a real sense of sort of, I don't know, vibrancy to the blog. I like that a lot.
Yeah. One of the things about our political blog is that he does a little more original writing, and there are less posts during the day, but, you know, that's where people are going to go for, you know, a more in-depth discussion of one topic, whereas I have, you know, any topic, I can cover any topic, and so I feel the need to, you know, not get too bogged down in one, you know, in one area, and try to keep things as diverse as the blogs that I'm reading.
Right, right. So. It seems like there's actually quite a bit of interrelation between what you're doing and what the reporters for your over-the-air stuff are doing. How do you think the blog has changed what the other reporters are doing?
It hasn't changed it too much. It just really varies person to person. Some of the reporters and the photographers take good advantage of the site. They use it to find story ideas and to make contact with people. And then there are others who, for whatever reason, you know, may never ever read it. And so they, you know, don't use it in any way in their job. And I know that the managers here encourage them to do that. But, you know, It just varies from reporter to reporter.
Yeah, it's going to vary based on sort of what they need.
Exactly.
You know, but I love the idea of sort of, I don't know, injecting it like into a story meeting or asking questions, because it's like a 24-hour focus group. It's great.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. And that is the primary reason why Nashville Talking exists. WKRN is smart enough to know that people are talking about, especially being a media organization, that people are talking about them whether they're listening or not. And by creating a site where you're aggregating all the local content, you can keep a great eye on what people are saying about you and about your organization, and take their advice or, you know, take their criticism to heart. This company, it really surprises me how progressive they are in that area. The GM, the general manager of our station, has his own blog with open comments. You know, and he takes a browbeating from former employees who, you know, aren't using it as intended. But, I mean, he's really, really interested in getting feedback from viewers. And in fact, there was one time he asked, you know, an open question. We have this game coming up, and we're not sure if we should air it live and interrupt this programming, or if we should tape it. And it turned out that one of the commenters said, "Why don't you run it live and then rerun it directly afterward for, you know, people who, because it was during the work day or something." Uh-huh. And he actually took that advice and said, "Can we do that? Well, I'm the general manager. I guess we can." And so that ended up what he did. And so they're very interested in, you know, getting feedback and taking advice from viewers.
Right. You know, can you tell me about any instances of folks who are bloggers who have, you know, no formal affiliation with the station, essentially coming across, you know, some sort of news event and writing it up, you know, what I call random acts of journalism?
Oh, it happens a lot. I'm trying to think specifically about something. I mean, there were some bloggers who were doing that, you know, and not because Nashville Talking inspired none of it. I mean, there's a blogger here named Bill Hobbs who spends a lot of his time doing, you know, taking up issues that are important to him and sort of driving them home, doing a lot of original reporting on them. But I can't off the top of my head think of anybody who, due to Nashville Talking, picked up on a story and sort of ran with it and made it their own.
Mm-hmm.
But
I find that it's rare, mm-hmm. but it happens often enough to be interesting.
Most
bloggers are interested in their own thing, and you know, in a way, you know, thank God they're not happening on news all the time, because news is usually not very good.
Yeah, no, no.
If there, I always people ask me, you know, well, is there a lot of news on your site in Watertown? And I said, well, no, because if there was a lot of news in Watertown, I'd have to move.
Yeah.
You know? Don't want to be near news.
Yeah, exactly.
You know? But there are a lot of subjects of interest that maybe wouldn't pass the filter of conventional news judgment when you talk about scarcity of column inches in a paper, scarcity of time on a newscast.
Mm-hmm.
But there's still a lot of stuff that sort of doesn't fit into that frame that's still of interest to a local community. It sort of gives that community its sort of uniqueness.
Mm-hmm.
Now, it's Nashville. I have to talk about music.
Oh, yeah. We have a lot of... Well, we don't have as many as I, you would think, music-related blogs, but that is definitely a big portion of our of the blogs that we have. And, you know, I haven't yet added any MySpace blogs. I don't know where to draw the line. I'm afraid if I add MySpace blogs and, you know, some of the social networking site blogs, that it would just become unmanageable.
Yeah.
But I know for a fact that there have got to be, you know, dozens and dozens of MySpace blogs that deal more directly with music than some of the ones that are, you know, run through Blogger or, you know, WordPress or something.
Right. You know, that brings up a good question. I see tons of MySpace and LiveJournal blogs that are by teens.
Mm-hmm.
And I don't point to them or quote to them because it almost feels like I'm letting the grown-ups into their treehouse.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, and I feel like they need a little sort of, you know, space.
Yeah, like a buffer.
Yeah, and also I just, I don't know, it feels maybe, it just doesn't feel right to sort of quote a teen's blog the way it does to quote an adult's blog. Are there blogs that you don't quote because you're not sure if the person is an adult or it seems really too personal?
Well, I don't really have too many blogs that on our list that are written by children. There was one time when there was a blog written by some high school boys who went to private school, and they were, there was only one time, and I sort of regret doing it, they were complaining about, in their blog about how, you know, if you, something about snow days and how if your parents can't get up and take you to school, then that's too bad for you. And I, you know, I pulled a quote from them and, you know, pointed out that not everyone goes to private school. Not everyone's mom can drive them. And I sort of regret doing that because they removed the post. And I think I embarrassed them more than really was necessary. And, you know, because they were what, you know, I have no idea if they were like, you know, 15 or 18. But yeah, other than that blog, sort of it has ceased to be. And I don't really have any more written by children, so no, that's really been an issue.
Yeah. Well, tell me about, you know, sort of how has the site met your expectations or the expectations of the people who launched it?
Well, I'm always sort of cynical, and like I said, when I was told about the project, I thought it was going to be something they would ask me to do, you know, for free a couple of days a week after, you know, my other job or something, and I was skeptical about the success of the site from the beginning. I, you know, didn't think I would have this job very long, and I just knew that they were going to come to their senses and do away with it. But I've been really, really surprised at the reaction of the people in the community. It seems to be a good resource for them, and, you know, anytime I link to someone who, you know, maybe doesn't get that many hits, they're always very grateful, and you know, I think it introduces, you know, a whole new number of readers to their site. So,
In looking at the site, I don't really notice ads.
Yeah, that's something we're sort of slowly working toward. Once you comment on a site on a post, you'll find Google ads between the post and the comment section. I don't know if we're making money off of Google ads, but what we're doing is we're working on an ad network with Burst. And we're going to try to do a local ad network and share revenue with local bloggers. That is something I'm not really involved in. It's more the GM and the consultant working on that. But it's something that they're taking their time with because they didn't want to come right out of the gate. You know, again, they didn't want the bloggers to feel exploited, like they're just trying to make money off of them. And so they wanted to get it up and running before they slapped ads on it, which is how most blogs do it. I mean, most people don't start out of the gate with ads on their blogs. Once they get a healthy readership, they might add them later, and they wanted to do things more organically.
Yeah, I think that's a great idea. I do worry when I see sort of traditional media organizations getting into blogging that they almost have too high expectations.
Yeah.
For how fast things will develop.
Exactly. I told them from the beginning, you know, the longer a site has been around, the bigger the chances are that they're more well-read. I mean, that's one of the things that I've discovered, you know, get there first on the web and you're more likely to have, you know, a bigger audience, it seems. So, they were never really, they've never really pressured me about hits or, you know, page views. I mean, they do keep an eye on it, and, you know, it has improved over time, but they've never, you know, said, oh, you know, you haven't gotten enough or whatever. So it's been really, they've viewed it as an experiment, and they don't really have that many goals set in stone, so it's not as, you know, they're just kind of rolling with it.
I think the great thing about blogs is that they can be a really inexpensive form of R&D, in that you're not spending tons of money on software, for example.
Right.
You know,
right.
And it's a way to sort of try things out and experiment with the idea of building an online community around a traditional media organization, and sort of see what happens. The reason I asked about ads is sort of goes to sort of the, I don't know, the intentions. The thing that I see when I look at the page is a banner up the top, which is about the TV station, which gives me the idea that the idea is to grow viewership and grow participation.
Definitely. I know for a fact that a number of the bloggers who participate in National Stalking now, you know, watch Channel 2. And it's not as though, you know, this great number of bloggers have, you know, switched channels and affected ratings. However, they feel, I think, personally invested in the station, and they wouldn't have felt that way if they weren't, you know, participating in the blog that is run by the station. So
right. And I think over time, and I think this is really clear in newspapers, is that media organizations and their audience have kind of drifted apart. There isn't, in a lot of places, there isn't the sense of my hometown newspaper. There's no mine involved. It's the newspaper when you talk about the television station, and they don't feel connected to them anymore.
Right.
And so you see, and when people don't feel that way, well, it's just a consumer product, and they can switch very easily.
Yeah.
You know. So I think the idea of this is sort of a way to use technology to rebuild that sense, a sort of healthy sense of a little bit of ownership and investment.
Oh, exactly. Yep.
That
was precisely, you know, the idea. They want people to be invested in the station and you know, have some sort of ownership.
Yep.
And do it through their, you know, and not do it through exploitation, but to do it, you know, by promoting their own sites and their own weblogs.
And maybe also to sort of get the sense in the local media market that we're the technology leader, we're hip.
Exactly, yeah. I mean, the thing is, so many people use the web now to find out things about companies. You know, you just type in the name of the company in Google, and you can discover what, you know, any number of people are saying about it. And by creating this site, created a lot of buzz, especially online. And so you type in W. Karen into the Google search engine, and you discover that there's, you know, Newsweek Japan articles written about, you know, their progress in the newsroom regarding blogs. And we've also changed to a video journalism format for the reporters and the photographers, and that's created a lot of buzz as well. And just
could you explain what that is?
Oh, sure. We were traditionally using a traditional reporter-photographer format where, you know, you send a reporter out with a large 70-pound camera and you turn one story a day. And what they've done is they bought new equipment. They bought smaller DV cams that the quality isn't quite as good as those that, you know, were 70 pounds, but they trained everyone from editors to photographers to reporters to shoot and write and edit their own piece, so there's more ownership of that piece as well. You know, some of the reporters who had been here a long time were a little more resistant to that, but it's been a really interesting transition. They, you know, we have the ability now to cover more stories because we have more people on the, you know, out on the streets. And like I said, it gives the video journalists a sense of ownership. You know, they own the story from beginning to end. The photographers, you know, don't shoot video and never get any credit for it.
Right.
So it's been, you know, it's been kind of interesting, and that has created a lot of press for the station as well.
What about just sort of the profile of your site? Like, if I went to Google and typed in Nashville, are you guys on the first page of results?
I don't know. Let's see. We are not on the first page. Let's see how far down we are. I'm kind of surprised. Our station's site is further up in the Google rankings. I'm not sure why. You know, National Stalking is the number one search result for lots and lots and lots of strings, but for whatever reason, it doesn't seem to be.
What I found is that for a long time, we didn't show up in the results for if you just searched for Watertown, but sort of subunits of that, we were huge. Like,
okay.
We were the first hit for many, many individual things within Watertown, but it took a while for Google to realize that we were sort of about Watertown.
Yeah.
You know, so that, but I'm interested in the idea that essentially A lot of times when you look on Google for a specific place, the first thing that comes up is not the local news organization.
Yeah.
And it's a way to sort of tell Google that, not just tell Google, but actually be sort of the resource about this community on the internet.
Yeah.
Which I think just largely isn't true, and at least WKRN is working toward it.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know? Because I think a lot of people are just AWOL on that subject. They're not even thinking about that.
No. Yeah. Okay. I agree.
I only have one final question.
Okay.
And do you put video on Nashville is Talking? Do you capture video from the news or from other places?
Well, we do various things. I mean, I don't embed video from the station's newscasts.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know if I've ever done that, but I certainly linked stories that contain video. And but more than that, I was down at Bonnaroo, which is a music festival, covering that for the site, and I, you know, with my little digital camera would take crappy video of, you know, people dancing or hula-hooping and then embed those on the site. And then, for instance, one of our guest bloggers one weekend dressed up in a tuxedo and went down to the Nashville Country Music Fan Fair and did on-the-street interviews with people, uploaded those videos from his camera to YouTube and then inserted them into the blog. So we use, you know, user-generated video, but not video as much from the station.
That's great. I use a lot of video, and that's extraordinarily popular. I do. It's not really analogous to what you're doing, but somebody once suggested that the motto of H2O Town should be, we watch local access cable so you don't have to.
Yeah.
And what's popular is essentially the few-minute clips of the, you know, local town council meeting so that you don't have to sit through the whole thing.
That's a great idea.
You know, and for some people, you know, that simply, you know, aren't setting a recording device and aren't home at that time, it might be useful to get, like, you know, just, you know, here's the part you really need to pay attention to. But I love the idea that you're doing sort of user-generated and, you know, YouTube-generated stuff. I think that's awesome.
Yeah. And that was all, you know, something that he did on his own accord. And, you know, my general manager the next Monday was like, that was great. And I was like, yeah, it was really good. And they definitely want to start doing more video-related things. In fact, we just had a blogger meetup last week. The station sponsored it, and they announced that they would like to start, you know, soliciting video from bloggers who maybe want to shoot an event or something. You know, so they have a digital camera at home, or they can come in and rent or, you know, on loan, take a camera from the station, go to their, you know, hometown and shoot the fair or something that we would never cover.
Right.
But because that person is invested in it, they're going to, you know, tell a story that would have never come about otherwise. I mean, they're going to be soliciting video from citizens and bloggers and paying for that video. So that's something they're actively working toward.
Oh, that's great. You know, I had read about that, and thank you for bringing it up. I can't believe I forgot to ask about it, because it made a pretty big splash on the web in terms of, especially because you guys offered to pay.
Yes.
You know?
And that's, of course, the first question from everyone, like, how much is pay? That's where, you know, this is all something that the station is doing experimentally, and there, you know, there's a lot of things to get worked out as far as who can use press credentials and all those sorts of, I don't know what I'm looking for, but the details of that relationship have yet to be worked out, but it's something that they're definitely working toward.
Do you think that essentially the ubiquity of digital cameras and digital cameras that take video will change things?
You know, it's hard to say. I find that video blogging has sort of, it seems to be stalling in popularity. I think a lot of people want video blogging to sort of take off, but I don't know many people who watch video blogs or anybody who really makes them, but I wonder if that'll change once the equipment becomes cheaper or something. I'm not really sure. I know a lot of people, I've seen a lot of people write, you know, I don't get this video blogging thing. I don't think it's going to work out. because, you know, a lot of people have the ability to tell a story through writing, but not as many people have, you know, an on-air presence, and I'm not sure. I'm interested to see what'll happen with that.
Yeah, I think what needs to happen is actually the tools that you need to use after you take the video need to get a lot better.
Oh yeah,
and
yeah.
Easier. It's just so much easier to write a blog post or even upload a photo today than it is to edit video.
Exactly.
You know,
and I think that's why the video you see now is 30 seconds from someone's personal digital camera that doesn't require any editing and is really, you know, it's very, very limited in what they can do.
Right, right. And I think there's also sort of among some people a reluctance to turn the camera on themselves. They feel awkward.
Definitely. And I think what people don't realize, it doesn't have to necessarily be turned on themselves. You know, a lot of blogging is personal, but, you know, you don't necessarily have to be on camera to pick one up and create good video. So,
Well, this has been great. Thank you
thank you
so much. I really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And keep in touch.
Okay, I will.
That concludes today's podcast from the Center for Citizen Media. Stay tuned for our next podcast featuring Courtney Hollins from WickedLocal.com, a new online community initiative from Enterprise News Media, which operates a number of community dailies and weeklies in Massachusetts. Our theme music is Accelerated Lifestyle off of Revolution Void's album Increase the Dosage. To hear more of Revolution Void's CC-licensed music, visit revolutionvoid.com.